This season, the Tottenham Way is sponsored by Harry's, and Harry's are the US shaving company hoping to make a big impact in the UK. And if you go to harrys.com/Tottenham, you can get your trial set for £3.95. That is usually worth £11.95. For that £3.95, you will get some shaving foam, a razor with five blades, a travel cover, and a handle in a colour of your choice. My handle is orange, Dan. What colour is yours?
That's quite racy. Mine's grey.
Grey. That's a bit bleak, but there is another third colour available. We don't know what that is, but do check it out. Go to harrys.com/Tottenham. Get your trial set for £3.95. Dan and I have both got it, and we both love it because it gives you the choice of when you would like to receive your blades. Thanks very much for listening, and enjoy the pod. Hello Dan.
Hello Tom.
How are you?
Very well, thank
we've,
you.
We've adopted a new strategy for this podcast. Usually we're kind of casual side on, but we're bang opposite each other tonight.
Quite confrontational.
It is a bit. It's like that old, what was the comedy sketch when they sat really close together and had basically their noses touching? Like Griff Jones and something.
I'm not familiar with it.
No,
I did watch the two Ronnies last night for like the first time ever.
Really?
Yeah,
first time ever.
I've seriously never watched it. It's the kind of thing my dad always bangs on about.
Okay, thoughts?
And I'm like, it's dated, it's not for me. And it was on like yesterday, you know, one of those really random old cable channels. And there was nothing else on. And it was really funny. Yeah, I was like chuckling away. Fair. I mean, obviously, it's like legendary comedy.
Yeah,
but I'd never given it a chance and I enjoyed it.
Giving it a chance. I love that. It's like, wow. Well, all the awards, yeah.
No, but it's just... It's just like so 70s. Like
yeah.
It could not be more 70s. I'm assuming it is 70s.
70s, 80s. Yeah.
So I think I've always just been a bit like disdainful. Like, oh, they weren't funny then.
Mate,
even though Fawlty Towers and everything is.
It'll be us
just as bollocks.
This is a weird start to the podcast.
It is, yeah. Recommend the two Ronnies.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we'll get onto some Spurs soon. But I was.
And another one. We're like the two Ronnies, aren't we?
God's sake. Well, there's The Office, and that'll be dated. Well, it already is.
It is dated now. I'm still quoting that like on an almost daily basis, which is worrying.
It's good. Yeah, your kids are going to never, ever hear the end of it, literally.
And not know what I'm on about.
No. Our listeners don't hear the end of it. Every week, there's always an Office quote.
Maybe we should move on.
Maybe, yeah, I think so. I was having a chat to a friend of mine from work, and she... went out to Australia last year in July.
Yeah.
And her sister is part of Crown Hotels. Like, she's a director for Crown Hotels or something like that. And she said she was out there and the Spurs squad was staying at that hotel.
In Melbourne. They're staying in Marriott.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a Crown Hotel or something like that. They're a chain. They do
presumably
casinos.
Yeah.
Very, very upmarket. And it was when Spurs were out there. And she didn't know. She's not fuss, but we got talking because I said I was going to Spurs to Wembley, and she was out there with her husband, and all the way through their stay, like first 3 days, he was getting really confused because the woman behind the desk was being really kind of like over friendly, but not in a, you know, facetious way, just in a you know, so how is your day going, how are you finding Melbourne, is this the first time you've been here and stuff. And it took until like 3 days later when she said, so what's it like being over from England? And he was like, fine. It's just very, very warm. She's like, you know, what about being a footballer and stuff like that? And she was convinced that he was a footballer for 3 days and he'd been getting loads of spa treatments and stuff just because he was in the same hotel. So there's a lesson in there, I think. Learn where football teams go for their pre-seasons. Don't have to hang around the squad all too much, but if you get some official merchandise.
Yeah, I feel like it'd be quite pricey though. I mean, obviously I've done the last two pre-season tours of Spurs, but I'm not really in a position to sort of pay for the same kind of facilities as them.
Pays for itself though, mate, with all the
I suppose it
treatments.
Does, yeah, with all the room service I've been getting. Mm. Yeah. Okay, well noted. I've actually got a story of my own.
This Go week. On.
It's slightly less glam.
Okay.
Not two runnies, no. I was spotted at Wembley. A bloke came into the press box and said, oh, you down from the Tottenham Way.
Really?
Said, yes. Very excited. This has never happened before. And he had a message.
Oh.
It's called Guy. So if you're listening, Guy, thanks for coming over. and you just said, "Tell Tom to stop being so grumpy." He's always moaning on Twitter, and I was like, "Yeah, I'll tell him." And then I was just like, "Yeah, so you seem to go on," and he just walks off. So all he wanted to say was tell Tom to stop being so grumpy.
I will try and chirp up on Twitter.
You don't look very chirpy.
I never do, to be honest.
No, you don't.
I don't. It's not my.
I mean, it's the week to be chirpy. If there was one.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. For many, many reasons. I think we should say before we move on to all things Spurs, congratulations to Sean Walsh.
Yes.
Who is of this parish, does a lot of stuff for the Tottenham Way, particularly on Twitter. He won the NCTJ Premier League Award for Sports Journalism. I believe it was today that he was given the award, I think. If you see on Twitter, he put a few pictures up. But yeah, congratulations, brother. Well deserved.
Amazing and thoroughly deserved. And I think Sean's taken quite a lot of flack because he writes about things that he cares about and he writes bravely and he sticks to his guns and he's taken a lot of shit and I think no one deserves it more.
Yeah, and that'll soon change. When he's got an editor to please,
he will sell out.
Yeah.
Don't we all?
Speaking of which, yeah. You've just come from the press conference, Pochettino press conference today, pre-Liverpool.
Yeah.
Anything interesting that you can shed some light on?
Yeah, it was a good presser, actually. He was, I'd say, a little bit subdued last week before
the FA Cup game.
The FA Cup game. Mm. That's it. I completely forgot the weekend game. But he was back on good form today, and I'd say the main message from it was really playing down the impact that Lucas Moura is going to have immediately.
Mm.
So there are obviously a lot of questions about him, and you know, Pochettino was even asked, you know, is the club excited? Has it given everyone a lift? Is there a buzz? And he was literally like, no, we're not excited. You know, just calm down. He's not played for 6 or 7 months. He's not Messi, Neymar or Ronaldo. Meaning, I think he's not a ready-made superstar. He's just going to come into the team and make a difference straight away. And I think he was kind of keen to point out that he would have to take time to adapt to England and obviously the club and the philosophy, which he mentioned a few times, which I think just means he needs to get fit, learn how to press, learn what I want him to do before he's going to play.
Mm.
So I'll be very surprised if he plays against Liverpool. Poch has said he doesn't think he will.
Newport?
Well, you'd like to think that would kind of be a perfect game to get him some minutes at Wembley against Newport, but even then, Poch doesn't tend to play unfit players against anyone.
No.
And especially given that I think everyone is now back in full training. So Alderweireld, Winks, Aurier, Rose, they'll all need starts against Newport.
Mm.
And putting in another player who's barely played and is not fit might be a step too far. So possibly bench, I would guess, against Newport.
Fair enough. I think there's excitement because he's not, I mean, he's what, our third or fourth most expensive signing ever, so there's not that pressure attached. I think only Sissoko, Lamela and maybe Soldado are more. Oh, and Sanchez. Son. No, Son was about 22 million. He was very cheap,
oh, yeah,
I'm sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, Sanchez as well, of course. But so he hasn't got that attached to him. He's kind of got a point to prove, I guess. If you in a similar but not identical way to Van der Vaart when he left Real Madrid, you know, a huge club in that country comes to Spurs, is a step, let's say at best it's a sideways step, but it's not really. PSG are probably quite a long way ahead of us. So, and he's 25. You know, there's quite a lot of positivity about this move, I think. And somebody said on, I think it's Football Weekly, that a player's value is never higher than when they've literally just signed for a club and not kicked a ball yet, because the excitement's there and you don't know what he could possibly do for you. But I think all the signs point towards it being a very positive sign. And I know nothing about him, I have to say. Do you know anything about him that makes you think?
Not really. I know what type of player he is, but I can't claim an intimate knowledge of him. I mean, Pochettino's got this new expression that I reckon we'll hear a lot over the next however long, 18 months or whatever, where he started saying, we sign opportunities, and saying, like, City, United, sign the players they want, and we sign opportunities. And I think that's quite telling. And I think you know, Aurier was in a very similar position, that being obviously a really talented player who basically had been displaced by just better players at a club that can buy whoever they want. Literally, they bought Neymar from Barcelona. They can get anyone. So these guys are obviously good players, but they've just fallen down the pecking order at a super club. And they've arrived at Spurs with various problems surrounding behaviour, fitness and form. And obviously the idea is to get them back to the level that they were when PSG signed them, or the level that PSG thought they could get to when they signed them in the first place.
Yeah.
So I think, yeah, it's a potentially really exciting move. But, I mean, Poch was kind of very, very cautious on it. He obviously said some of the right things, like he can help us, he can fit in. But, you know, he even went to the length of sort of saying, you know, it wasn't my decision to remove Foyth from the Champions League squad and put Mori in. Yeah, that was a club decision. You know, almost as if he's saying, if he doesn't play in the Champions League, you know, I didn't make that call.
Yeah.
And if we're short of a centre-back, I didn't make that call. But I'm not sure it'll come to that. You know, you like to think in 3 or 4 weeks he'll be sort of pushing for a starting place.
And, yeah,
especially with the games, you know, coming so thick and fast now.
Yeah, absolutely. The one thing I would say that we probably shouldn't read all too that much in is too much into is everyone talking about Neymar being really annoyed that he's left. And I just think that he's a Brazilian international who's kind of grown up with Neymar a little bit. Like Neymar mates with everyone.
I think it's solidarity with a mate. And there's also already some whispers that Real Madrid could be interested in Neymar in the summer, which would obviously be great news for Spurs if it was Neymar instead of Kane.
Yeah,
but I wonder if already Neymar's looking for reasons to get upset at PSG, and he can conveniently say next year when he tries to force a move, "Oh, I was really pissed off when they signed Lucas Moura in January. He was my best mate.
Yeah, good as a trophy."
But I think it'll be good. It'll be particularly good, I think, for Aurier, because he's already said a lot of really positive stuff, and even something like, you know, it's good for me in my life. It's good for us in our lives. And I get the impression they're probably living quite near each other, their families know each other, their mates off the pitch, and in an ideal world they'd be kind of combining down the right, because I think more often than not plays as a right winger, so that could be quite an interesting kind of made in Paris partnership could do well for us.
We've got a Brazilian winger. Is that an expensive Brazilian winger?
Who everyone wanted to sign like in 2013 cost $35 million. So I mean, maybe it is exciting, but I get what Pochettino's saying.
Yeah.
He's not saying we've signed Neymar
and
he's going to do magical things for us against Liverpool on Sunday.
Fair enough, time will tell. I mean, speaking of time, Christian Eriksen's goal against Man United.
Did not see it.
I was sitting down.
Starting whistle. That is
me.
The kind of thing my dad says. Yeah. Just needles me the wrong way.
So I was just... So the kickoff happens, and then you hear the sort of the clack of the seats and everyone's starting to sit down. And I'd literally turn around. Yes. Yeah. And I'd turn around and put my seat down, and just as my arse hit the seat itself, it was in. It was brilliant. And I remember straight away, everyone immediately started to talk about Ledley King and the record. So everyone's looking on Twitter and stuff. Didn't quite beat it though, did he?
No,
like
it didn't.
Half a second out, wasn't
he? Yeah, I think he was the third quickest in the end.
Which is crazy.
Shearer also got one on 11, but marginally quicker.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was sort of logging on to Twitter and to get myself set up. And then I think when Eriksen was just stepping onto that ball, in that 1 second... when it fell for him, there was a sort of intake of breath. And I looked up just as he was hissing it. So I hadn't seen the kickoff or where it had come from or who, you know, Kane or Ali's parts in the goal.
There was a definite plan, though, because Dembele kicked off, which I'd never seen before.
Yeah, I want to talk about it. I think it's interesting. Michael Cox did a piece for ESPN on how every team kicked off about a month ago. And I've got to say, if on the off chance Michael's listening, I apologise, but I was quite disdainful of it at the time, just thinking, oh, this is, you know, such a strange piece. We can't read anything into this. But actually, you know what? It is, in a way, a set piece, albeit you have to keep all your men in the half, in your own half. And if a team had a set piece, you know, a few yards inside the half, and everyone was forward, you would pay attention to what they did with it.
Yeah.
You know, if they played it short, or if they were lumping it into the box every time, it would be a talking point. So I suppose there's a case to say that doing something like that from kickoff, that did seem deliberate. You know, Dembele back to Vertonghen,
yeah,
Kane sprinting for his life.
We ended up with all four of our attacking players in the box when Eriksen hit the ball.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder if it was a strategy. Because Mourinho said afterwards, you know, we knew what they did from kickoffs. He even said, we knew that Kane was often in the opposition half at kickoff.
Which, bollocks.
Yeah, did feel like bollocks. But I wonder if Spurs said, you know, Jones and Smalling take 30 seconds to get themselves in position, get a high ball into the box and see what happens. And obviously Pochettino didn't say anything to that effect. I don't think he would, but it'll be very interesting to know whether that was a really deliberate ploy.
Yeah, can't do it again. That's the thing. Everyone's going to be very switched on against us immediately,
I suppose. Yeah, I mean, it worked at the right time in a very big game. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a perfect... Apart from his goal, Eriksen was just ridiculous, wasn't he? It was a really perfect performance from, you know, the guy that was so missed against Southampton, and it was a big talking point afterwards, and we all said how much of a difference would it have made? Was it just a squad thing? But there's no denying just what he brings to a team, is there? And that was one of his best ever performances, I think, for us.
Yeah, I can't really disagree with that. I do want to talk about the finish, because I thought it was such a nice finish as well, because he thinks about going for it with his right foot. There's a minute where, well, not a minute, there's a split second where he's shaping to shoot with his right, and then he knows he's got so much time, he just thinks, nah, 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 and opens his body and just pearls it with his left. It's
quite similar to the goal he scored against Man City, the winner we got a couple of years ago, where Lamella put him through, and there's a couple of times where he really looks like he should finish it, and Hart's bearing down on him, and he just takes half a second longer.
Yeah,
and he slides it under him, so he's just cool, isn't he, Eriksen, in everything he does.
Yeah, he's composed in those situations. But yeah, he was fantastic, and I think it frustrated me a little bit, because I think so much of the post-match analysis and talk is focused on United's midfield two of Matic and Pogba, and how, oh, you can't play Pogba in a two and it just doesn't work. And it went relatively unnoticed that just how good I think Eriksen was and how good Dembele was. And I think that does suit Spurs in a way. We've said for the last few years they go under the radar a lot, and that can be quite helpful at times, but I felt they deserved more credit, really, for the way they played, because they made Matic and Pogba look totally anonymous. It wasn't as if it happened just by accident.
Yeah, it seemed like Dembele and Dier engaged them very early, and then it left a lot of space, because Son was coming short quite a lot, and Son wasn't wide very often, and it seemed as if we were allowing the fullbacks to bomb on, which, considering it was Trippier and Davis, was perhaps risky for a start, but also just quite novel and quite traditional Tottenham, if you like, traditional Pochettino Tottenham. I mean, Trippier deserves a mention.
Yeah, Trippier was great.
He's excellent, wasn't he?
Yeah,
I think
Manchester Cafu. He was just like bombing past people.
Yeah, I think he tripled his take-ons for the season in one run in the first half. I'm sure of it, because I'm sure there's been a thing about he's completed two take-ons all season and both have been going backwards into his own half. So it may have been Nathan Clark on Twitter who mentioned it, or put a bit of a jokey highlights reel together for it. But he just stormed past two or three players. It shows that he's got something in him. And considering how bad he was at Newport, I don't know, everyone was.
Yeah, I was a bit worried about Trippier, because I think he was so roasted by Sane at the Etihad. And then he seemed to lose his place to Aurier almost permanently for the next kind of few weeks. And I think it'd be interesting to speak to him about it next time he stops in the mix zone, because I do wonder if he would just say, yeah, you know, I did take a bit of a battering against Sane, and I'm putting words in his mouth here, but it felt like his confidence really dropped. But he just looked back to full confidence against United, and it shows what he can do when he's when he's at the top of his game, he gets labelled pedestrian and kind of one pace quite a lot, but he did look quite dynamic and
made the second goal
and he really pushing forward an well.
Incredible second goal, by the way.
It was a great finish.
Better finish than Kane.
Why has he gone with his right foot? I just don't know.
He's like,
yeah, Kane's not finishing that from there. He'll probably take the first time, he'd check a touch and then put it in the other corner.
Phil Jones looks like his body's made of wet cement at the start of a game and he's slowly setting throughout the game. Like, his joints are just seizing as he goes. He's a bizarre footballer.
But I do think on the topic of Eriksen and on Trippier and on Dembele and Davis and the whole team, it really helped getting the early goal, obviously, because United had to come out and attack Spurs, and I think there's nothing Spurs like more than being attacked at Wembley. I mean, it really does feel like home sweet home when teams have to get a goal there and a kind of coming at Spurs, because I think then the space just opens up. And Eriksen, being a good player, he would, when United are leaving those holes in midfield, he would just pop up in them all the time and get balls into them. And I think it was such a complete performance.
For what we always bemoan the fact that we go to Old Trafford and sort of compete maybe a bit meekly for a while and then concede a stupid goal, which we have done in the last three seasons, I think. But in terms of at home against Mourinho in particular, and this is a pretty bad segue because he's changed clubs since Pochettino's been there, but Poch has won three games against Mourinho since he's joined Spurs at home. And he drew the other one. So we beat them 5-3 in the first season, 0-0 his second season with Chelsea. And we've obviously beaten them twice in a row when he's been at Man United. See, he's got a bit of a... It does seem as though he's got him maybe a little bit figured out, perhaps.
At home, though.
At home, of course. Yeah. But then you look at that, that's at home with... in two different stadiums, which is a factor, and with two different clubs as well. I think there is something in that. You know, you can't play exactly the same way each possibly. Time.
But then I think this is the big question over the club before the Liverpool game. You know, can they start to turn this good form at home against the top six into away form? Because it's one win in 18 at the big six away. Yes, a good performance, but somewhat fortuitous against City, given that I think Kane's penalty wasn't definitely a penalty back in 2016. And then a load of defeats, and quite bad defeats and quite meek defeats as well. Whereas at home against these teams, I mean, Chelsea did feel quite anomalous because it was the first league game at Wembley, and actually I think Spurs did batter them in terms of possession and chances. I can't really remember. Either way, they seem to have got it sussed at Wembley, as they had it at White Hart Lane against the big six, and it's just... I don't think that's exclusive to Mourinho, is what I'm saying. Pochettino's very, very good at home against the big clubs, and he hasn't got it right away, and I think we can save that chat for the Liverpool preview, I guess.
Yeah, very fair. Do you know the last time we won three league games against Manchester United in a row?
1966.
1982.
Oh, really? I thought I heard 66 on the...
Well,
on the match of the day.
On the match of the day.
That's another thing my dad would say. You're watching the match of the day tonight.
I looked it up and I'm...
We'll have to write in and tell us.
Christ, what's wrong with us? We started with the two runnies.
We slipped. Turned
your dull way. Really, it was a pretty perfect performance. We got a question from Chicago Spurs, asks, with all the Man United fanboy Twitter accounts crying foul over the aggression, are we the baddies now, and how much do you love it? It was an aggressive game, wasn't it? And there was quite a few, towards the end in particular, a couple of unnecessary swipes, particularly from Ali, and particularly on Sanchez, which seemed to be just playing up to the crowd a little bit. But it's not new with Ali, is it? But there was a couple of times where I think Dembele really wasn't having any of it.
It's not new with Dembele, let's face it.
In big games,
he always gets fired up, doesn't he?
Yeah, true. But even like Jan and Davis putting some real crunch in tackles.
I mean, I thought Spurs got frustrated because they didn't get a lot from Mariner throughout the game, particularly dreadful. In the first half.
Yeah, it was dreadful.
He looked desperate to give every 50-50 United's way, and I don't normally say that, and I'm honestly saying that as a reporter, not as a Tottenham fan. I honestly thought he was perhaps trying to overcompensate against the home team.
Yeah.
That, you know, which referees do sometimes do, and then not play up to the crowd. And he just didn't seem to give Spurs anything in the first half. Kane was getting a right kick in. Kane, by the way, we didn't mention him just then, but
yeah,
I mean, his just general hold up play, like everything stuck to him.
Mm.
And he occupied Jones and Smalling, you know, almost constantly for 90 minutes.
Yeah.
And I know they get a lot of stick, but you know, they know how to deal with themselves. They played against Kane before.
Mm.
They took a proper punishment.
Mm.
So yeah, I did think. What was the question again?
About the aggression and being the baddies.
Yeah, I suppose you're always the baddies when you start beating teams, aren't you? So yeah. You should embrace it.
Yeah.
No one hates you if you're crap.
Yeah.
It's just part of becoming a bigger club. You get more abuse and more people dig you out.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll finish on a question from Jim at Stylish Riot, friend of the pod. Has there ever been a display as dominant against a big club as last night? It doesn't give any context, but let's say under sort of Pochettino or Spurs' recent history. I mean, you've mentioned there about our home form and how good it has been. I think there are actually a few examples under Pochettino, and I don't think the Chelsea 5-3 necessarily comes into it. It was pulsating.
Yeah, well, I had to do this week, actually, because Harry Kane said to us afterwards he thought it was in the top five Poch performances.
Mm.
So I then did my top five Poch performances, which is really hard because there were loads of...
Yes or no.
Okay, I'll do from five. I had the 2-1 away win at City, which I think in hindsight I might change.
Yeah,
but I put it in there because it was the only one that's come away, and I felt like that gives it extra significance.
Yeah.
But actually, looking back, it was a bit more of a sucker punch than a kind of dominant.
And if Pellegrini was on his way out, they'd lost sight of everything by then.
It was only February, I think, and
I think he knew he was gone though. He was as good as gone.
Yeah, but City weren't completely out of the title race at that point.
Fair enough.
I think that sort of knocked them out and put Spurs in pole position to put the pressure on them. I then think I had the 2-0 win over Guardiola at White Hart Lane.
Yeah.
When Spurs ended his unbeaten run.
No Kane. Yeah.
Yeah. I then think I had the 2-1 win over Arsenal. The two Kane headers come from behind.
Okay.
And I then and number one. I mean, he's on four here.
Yeah. Real Madrid.
Oh yeah. Sorry. Real Madrid was in there. Yeah. Real Madrid was in there, and I had the best performance on the pitch. I thought was the 2-0 win over Chelsea.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Just thought it was such a... It's really easy to sort of look back and look at Chelsea now and forget that they were actually going for the record that City broke this season of consecutive wins, and just no one had found an answer to them up to that point.
Yeah.
Frustratingly. Like, and no one could play them with three at the back. And they looked infallible. They looked like they couldn't be beaten. And Spurs matched up and set a blueprint for how to beat them, and that was really significant, and they were just so good that day that I think that was the best Big Six win, or in fact win.
Most controlled, I think. Yeah. But I think United had similarities to it. We didn't, you know, give a lot away. Should have won by a lot more, actually. Really,
it should have been three or four. United.
Yeah, so I mean, it's great to have so many to choose from.
The 5-3 was kind of the first Poch performance, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And it was really the beginning, I think, of all this.
Mm.
And I think for that reason alone, I probably should have had it in there ahead of the 2-1 at City. But still conceded three goals, I think. And that isn't very Poch. Like, defensive, the defensive solidity is a big part of what he's built at Spurs.
It's great to think that we could have a top 10 quite easily.
Yeah, I mean, it should have been a top 10.
Yeah.
I mean, there's the 2-0 win over Arsenal, the 2-0 win over United in the final game of White Hart Lane, the 3-0 win over United when Spurs blitzed them in kind of 6 minutes, and Lamella.
Yeah.
There's an easy top 10. And I think the 1-1 at Real Madrid,
yeah,
deserves a hell of a lot
for a different for different reasons. But yeah, great. Yes. Well, Jim, it's in there. It's in the top five.
Yeah.
Well, not Dan's, but
the only reason I perhaps didn't have that in there was because I did think United were very poor, and I did think Mourinho got it wrong.
Mm.
Which isn't to say that Spurs didn't make him get it wrong and make them look poor, but clearly having that cheese grater midfield in front of Jones this morning is not the best idea.
Yeah.
Away from home.
Fair enough. Just before we move on to a Liverpool preview, we had the cup draw since we last recorded as well. Millwall or Rochdale if we make it past Newport. I believe it's away as well.
Yes.
Maybe not for the fans, considering we had last year and there was a little bit of aggro, but a good draw probably for us to, if we get through the next two, God forbid we go out to one of the two that we've got, but into the quarterfinals you would think after...
Yeah, I mean, Millwall away will be tough, but they've got to go to Rochdale.
Yeah.
So there's no guarantee it will be Millwall. I'm actually away for that game.
Okay.
I'm on holiday that weekend and I'm quite relieved.
I was going to say, did you plan that?
Slightly relieved.
Yeah.
I think it will be a game that will be dominated in the press by talk about safety concerns and fans and violence and hooliganism and boring stuff like that.
Mm.
Relevant, but I find it, you know, a bit boring. I prefer to talk about football. And because there'll be all that, it might then be a surprise at how organised and how well Millwall play. I don't think it'll be that easy, assuming that it's Millwall. I don't know anything about Rochdale.
I mean,
it won't be as easy as the sort of 5-0 at White Hart Lane. It's a completely different prospect, I think, going there.
Yeah, fair enough. And I think that we'll probably, on the flip side, we'll probably learn a few lessons from Newport and our approach, perhaps. So, you know, and not just because they're a better side, but, you know, we've had that scare or that kick up the arse, haven't we? So, not much more to say on that. Liverpool, Sunday. Anfield, not a happy home life
for us to go there. Round. Two wins in 25 in the Premier League.
And one of those was the last game of the season when nothing was on offer.
Is that right?
Under Redknapp, Van der Vaart scored a really good volley. Modric scored as well. We took them apart at Wembley earlier this season with a similar sort of display to United in that kind of all action up top and quite high up the pitch and really pressing them. But we've tried that the last two seasons at Anfield, haven't we? And I think a lot of the talk on Twitter amongst Spurs fans at the moment is how we should change approach, let's say, and go perhaps a little bit more defensive, a little bit more on the break. I think a lot of this is driven by people feeling that Moura might play a bit more of a part than he probably will, because he's obviously quite pacey and can cause damage.
Be in the squad,
but that's what I was going to say. I think you're right there that he's not likely to feature. How do you see it? And what did Pochettino say in the press conference today? Did he give any indication of
I'm not supposed to say because it's under embargo, but he did say that he thinks Spurs would have won the title in one of the last 2 years if they'd been better away from home at the top six. So he obviously knows it's a problem and something that's held them back, but he's not really keen to elaborate on it. And to be honest, he kind of hinted he was going to play the same way as he always does at Anfield, and he did against United. He said something like United have lots of attacking players in Pogba and Sanchez and Lingard and Lukaku, and likewise Liverpool have a lot of attacking players. But obviously it's very different when you're away from home. It sort of feels like a game where if Poch does that, there'll probably be quite an early goal. And if Spurs can impose themselves on Liverpool early on and score quickly, you know, not Wednesday quickly, but inside the first 15 minutes, then it might work really well. But the problem was last year they tried it and they were 2-0 down in, 10 minutes.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
If he's really going to replicate the approach of Wednesday at Anfield, which hasn't worked yet, it does feel like Spurs need to score first and score early, and then Liverpool kind of have to come at them a bit more and they can drop a bit deeper and play a bit more reactively. And which I agree with those saying that that's something to try, because it obviously hasn't worked so far.
Would you... I think Davis and Trippier were... Obviously, everyone was excellent against United, but Trippier and Davis seemed to really step up, probably had both of their best games of the season, I would say. It would be harsh to drop them, but you could completely see the thought process in doing it, and partly because Pochettino likes to rotate his fullbacks. Yeah. But I remember in the home game, Aurier played left-back, and I think Trippier played right-back in that game. But there was a clear plan with Aurier to stop Salah, because he cuts in on his left foot, and obviously Aurier was on his wrong side, so there was quite a clear strategy to try and stop him, and he's not stopped. He's been like a train this season.
It shows that Pochettino is aware of that issue of the pace against Davis and Trippier.
Would you do the same this time round? Can you see the same trick working twice, or was it a risk? I thought it was
risky.
Well,
it depends on fitness. I think that Rose and Aurier are a bit closer than, say, Alderweireld and Winks. I don't think Alderweireld's going to be fit.
No.
He might be on the bench, but he'll probably be safe for Newport. Mm. I think likewise Winks. But I think Rose and Aurier are a bit closer, so he might start one or both, just on their natural sides, and to try and match up against Salah and Mane with a bit of pace.
Yeah,
it does feel like Davis and Trippier would have a tough time against those two.
Well,
but then again, you look at kind of Aurier at Southampton, albeit with no protection, who got skinned by Bertrand a couple of times. So,
but also,
it doesn't guarantee that they're going to be fine.
I would say Mane, it's slightly different, but Mane, Firmino and Salah poses a similar sort of threat to Sanchez, Martial and Lukaku, in a way. You know, there's pace and there's...
Yeah, I think that's the point Poch was maybe trying to get at. Yeah.
So I wouldn't be against any... I'd understand any selection that's made, and especially if he's got what you would say close to a full squad. But it's that mentality, and it's that not being beaten before you've even gone out there, which still is a bit of a problem for Spurs. You know, you look up going to Stamford Bridge and Old Trafford and even the Emirates still, it's like we can have all these great grand ambitions and say all the right things and pick a really good team, but it suddenly Mane's walked through Ben Davis twice and we're 2-0 down. So I wouldn't be surprised by anything, I don't think. You said there that Toby's unlikely to be playing at all. He'd be safe for Newport because he can get 90 minutes.
Yeah, he also said that about Rose, and I've just remembered that.
Okay.
So yeah, I would play down Rose and Alderweireld's chances of playing.
Yeah.
But I think Aurier has a decent chance, given that he only got hurt against Southampton, which was only a couple of weeks ago, wasn't it? So and before that, he was playing quite regularly.
Mm.
So it could be Trippier and Aurier again.
Yeah.
I would be surprised if he tried that for a second time at Anfield.
Yeah, I suppose, yeah.
He's more likely to be Davis and Aurier.
And I would be looking at, because Dembele has to be managed now, and he was obviously incredible against Man United, but it perhaps isn't the worst thing in the world if we do end up with Dier and Wanyama.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, Dembele also started against Newport, so it would be a third game in a week, and I don't think he's done that for a while. I'd have to check.
Yeah,
but it does feel like he does have to be managed. But he'd sit out Newport midweek, so I think if he was okay
against a pretty pony midfield of Liverpool as well, Henderson and Chan.
Yeah, if he was okay, I think Poch will play him, and then you can always bring on Wanyama in about 70 minutes.
Yeah, when we're 2-0 down. But who knows? Kane stuck on 99 goals. It's something that...
Do you see how livid he was with Son?
Yeah, I sit in the corner, and we'd obviously... Son had hit it and it had gone wide, and you'd like hands on head sort of stuff, but then instantly just looked at Kane screaming in his face.
Yeah.
I don't think I could scream at Son. I'd feel really bad.
He's a nice man.
He does seem like a very nice man. I bet he'd really apologise as well. Like, one of those ones that makes you feel really bad for having a go at him. Like, having a go at, being an adult and being told off.
Do you think Kane's getting a bit more kind of superstar-y and sort of
I mean, the ball was there to be played across.
I meant his reaction, not.
I mean that
in the best possible way. Like, I think, I think he's getting a bit more aggressive on the pitch.
And fair
enough.
In the
way he plays, yeah, I think he's getting a bit more gobby at referees. I think he's much more willing to bollock his teammates.
Yeah.
I think that's all in a kind of very Kane, positive, kind of team player type way. But it just seems to be another part of his kind of ascension to superstardom.
Yeah.
He is the main man, and he's got that authority to say, you know, you should have passed that. Yeah, even though if I was in exactly the same position, I'm shooting for sure.
I think he's not moaning constantly about not being
I don't mean that at all.
I'm not saying you are, but I'm agreeing with you. Yeah. I'm saying he's not doing that, but he's, when he looks at it and thinks, well, I've got a chance for a 2-yard tap-in to put us 3-0 up against United and us to have the rest of the evening off, I'm going to bollock you if you don't if you don't do that.
And but an easy way to get to 100 goals.
This is it. I do wonder, I think every record ahead of him he's smashed.
Oh, you think he's going to frag out and get stuck there?
No, I don't necessarily think that, but I wonder if the amount of records that he's broken, and then you get to that very obvious one that it's not a record, it's just you've reached a certain number.
A milestone is
the word. I don't think it's a problem. I just think if he doesn't do it against Liverpool, and then say he doesn't play against Newport, or if he gets it against Newport, that'd be annoying.
It's Premier League goals.
Oh, yeah, of course it is. Yeah. And then I don't know who we've got after the. Oh,
Arsenal.
Oh, okay. Oh, forgive him if he doesn't score at Anfield as long as he scores it.
Yeah, I mean, it's been one game. Was it been?
Didn't.
Yeah, he got 99 against Southampton, and then Newport doesn't count. So it's been one game, so I wouldn't.
Well, I'm panicking.
Yeah, I wouldn't panic just yet.
Yeah.
But,
okay.
I mean, there should have been a penalty kick in the first half when Valencia sighed Ali, and he should have got it then. He should have got it when Son should have squared it. So I think he was a bit unlucky not to finish that game with 100 goals.
I remember at the start of the season, I think it was the Burnley game where it looked a little bit too obvious that we were trying to get Kane to score in August. And I think you raised that actually on the podcast that we did. You said it really looked like the players were, I think we went 1-0 up against Burnley and then Kane was taking all the free kicks, which I know he does anyway. He takes a lot of them.
Yeah, he took one in real like Eriksen territory, which made me think he's trying a bit too hard.
And
but again, it kind of backs up my point about his sort of ascension to stardom. Like, I think he's earned the right to say to Eriksen, I'm not having this free kick, because he's definitely scored a couple of free kicks, albeit deflected, since Eriksen last scored one.
I've scored a Premier League free kick since Eriksen last scored
one. Yeah, and when Eriksen starts curling them in again, then he can say, then I'm having this. But I think at the moment it's sort of Kane's to take or leave.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. Let's do some listener questions. Adam Pell, what formation do we play when everyone is fit? We've had this question before, I think, Dan, and it's actually never come to pass because we end up going, oh, we've got this lovely fully fit squad, and then Kane rolls an ankle or something.
Yeah.
But it is a good question because, and I think I know what your answer is going to be already, in that we've got a lot of games. You can always switch it up.
Oh God, I'm becoming that easy to read.
Well,
I've been indoctrinated by.
Mate, you're a tabloid journalist, mate. You could, football cliches would be able to write it on
one game at a time.
Yeah. Back to the training ground.
We might find out against Arsenal because everyone's back in full training now, assuming the slightly unfit players get a good run out against Newcastle. Then 4 days.
Newport.
Then sort of four days till Arsenal, and obviously a massive game. So
I think
we might find out. I think.
Because the front four is unchangeable at the moment.
Yeah, I was about to say, I think if you'd have asked me sort of 3 or 4 months ago, I would have picked the back three.
Mm.
But then the problem with that formation now is you kind of have to get rid of Son, unless you're putting Ali in midfield, and then you have to get rid of Dembele. And Ali makes a mistake. You want Ali close to goal. So I would probably go 4-2-3-1. With the quicker fullbacks, but then you know what,
it's difficult
because
it.
I don't think Alderweireld, you know, he doesn't there's no guarantee he goes straight in for Arsenal, even if he looks very good against Newport.
Yeah.
Because Sanchez and Vertonghen have looked good. So suddenly I'm reminded of Poch's comments in the summer where he said, you know, we want our star players like Alderweireld, Eriksen, Ali and Kane to feel competition. And I think at the time that seemed kind of quite laughable, the idea that those guys would be worrying about their place. But actually, Alderweireld will be. If Moura works out perfectly, then you know, one of Eriksen or Ali.
Yeah, Ali should be looking will be,
particularly with Son. Obviously, Kane isn't from Llorente, but yeah, maybe give it in time, he, you know, he will be a bit more worried. So, just to add in another cliche, it's a good problem to have.
Yeah, good problem to have. Yeah, not down to the bare bones. I think there was a football writer, and I forget his name, but he said that it's a bit of a... It's kind of this ongoing myth amongst in football that you need two first 11s to be, you know, title challengers or to win trophies. And he said, what you actually need is your first 11 and the best seven-a-side team that you can imagine. So you think of seven-a-side being, you'd need to be able to play a couple of positions. You can't just stick left wing if you're on seven-a-side. You need to be able to track back and stuff. He said, and those are the players that are the periphery, but do that job and can provide something that perhaps others can't, but you wouldn't necessarily see in the first team. And I think that's quite... We're getting towards that sort of stage, I think. If we put our first 11 on paper, let's say for argument's sake that Sanchez is the one that drops out, but you then have Vorm, Sanchez, and you've got the wing backs, whoever misses out, two of those are good enough. Sissoko is Moussa Sissoko, and I have no major problem with putting him in a seven-a-side team. But, you know, Moura and... There's a good core.
One
there,
of Wanyama or Dier.
Exactly. Yeah. So there's a real. There's a.
Still got Llorente.
Yeah, stick Son up front. Yeah. All right, drop Son on the bench and put him up front. That's where it's come to, Fernando. But it's a good squad, I think, and I think that we're always said we're one injury away from a bit of a disaster, and it's been Kane before. It's been Toby twice in the last 2 years. Vertonghen's had his injury problems. Rose has obviously had his injury problems. Lloris seems to go down ill once every 3 months as well. But to be in a position where we are, 2 points behind Liverpool, 2 points behind a rapidly fading Chelsea, I think, and at Wembley as well, it's quite remarkable that we've got to this stage, I think. And I think that there's probably a lot more credit. So I should stop moaning on Twitter, really, shouldn't I?
Yeah. You should. And Kane said it himself after United, that I think City's form and lead does distort the rest of the Premier League quite a lot. I mean, they are another freak team, and I know we seem to say this every year, like Leicester were a freak team, Chelsea were a freak team.
Yeah.
They're like an extra freak team. They're probably going to win it in March, record time, the earliest ever win, I thought. And so it's easy to look at that and think, well, everyone else has done poorly, but actually, compared to the rest, Spurs have done very well, and that's not playing any home games at all.
What's your gut feeling for top four? Which, let's face it, we're fifth and we've got 13 games left. That's the aim now.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, can I answer that after Liverpool and Arsenal?
I wasn't feeling
too confident, but then I really didn't expect Wednesday night.
Do you think it's a disaster if we don't get it? Would Poch... I'll ask a different question. Levy or Poch would see it as a disaster? Or which one of those two do you think would see it as more of a disaster?
That's a good question. I think probably Levy. I don't think the Champions League football is the be-all and end-all. And we have seen teams like United and then obviously Arsenal miss out in the last few years and remain competitive in the transfer market and, well, in the case of United, on the pitch. I would just worry that guys like, in particular, Harry Kane has really found his level in the Champions League, and he's just obviously loving playing in it and loving testing himself against your Real Madrids, your Borussia Dortmunds, Yeah, Juventus. He's obviously just so at home there, yeah. In a way that Bale was when Spurs first got in the Champions League. And to then say to him, you have to play Europa League football again for a season, I don't think it would necessarily be terminal straight away, but it would be one of the things that would be in his head and in others' head. That would basically be a negative, and when it came to if it came to deciding their future, it wouldn't count for Spurs.
Yeah,
and I'm not saying any of those things are going to happen, but I just really do feel that Ali as well, the way he played against Real at home, they obviously players that belong in the Champions League, and I think it would be sort of tough on them to go back to the Europa League.
New stadium, though. I mean, I think
that's a factor. Yeah, it's a complicated conversation. But I was pessimistic, but I do feel now I sort of feel like Spurs might be right. As particularly as you said, it's not looking good at Chelsea, and you know it's either going to be Hiddink in, or at least everyone's going to know that it's Conte going at the end of the season, and that's never a good situation.
Hello, Gus. Yes, the usual terms.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Well, we'll see. We'll finish on a different question. This was one that came up in the WhatsApp group earlier. Which team, if they could only play 11 of their best player, their one player, which team do you think would do the best in the Premier League or win the Premier League?
I think Spurs would win the league.
Do you?
Yeah.
So you think Kane? I think
a team of Harry Kane's would win the league.
Okay, so let's maybe go for the other top six and see why that happens. So Man City's best player is probably De Bruyne.
Yeah, a team of De Bruyne's would be really good. It would be really athletic, it would be technical, it could finish, it could get balls in the box, it could tackle.
Yeah.
It'd be quick. I still would fancy the Harry Kane team. Yeah. Not deliberate.
Yeah.
I still would fancy the Harry Kane team just to have the edge defensively over the De Bruyne team. I think Kane's a better centre back and he'll be better at fullback. Well, he's been in net before.
He's got more minutes
experience
in goal.
The gloves, and that would have served him well. I think who would Liverpool pick? I mean, the Mo Salah team would not track back nearly enough. It would be poor defensively.
I mean, it'd be quite similar to Liverpool what they now. Do now. Yeah, it wouldn't be too far off.
It would be exactly the same as Liverpool now.
Chelsea would have Hazard.
Know. Yeah, but you'd put balls in the box, wouldn't you?
Yeah, and if you got Harry Kane, you back him. But then Harry Kane tracking or being pushed back by
I think he'd be all right.
Really?
Yeah, I think. The Alexis Sanchez team, again, I just wouldn't really fancy it defensively.
Imagine them just shouting at each other for not passing them the ball.
That'd be a good team.
Would he be really happy or really upset? Because he'd be only passing to himself, but he would also have the ball, if that makes sense.
But he'd always have the ball.
This is a bit Schrodinger, isn't it?
It is.
He'd always have the ball, but he'd never have
who
the
would
ball
Arsenal,
as well.
Who would be the Arsenal team?
Probably the Ozil team. God. That team's going down.
That team is struggling.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't... Wenger wouldn't pick... If he had to clone someone 25 times, he wouldn't be picking Ozil, would he?
Don't think he'd pick any of them, really. It's an interesting
one. Yeah, Arsenal...
Well, when you put it like that, then...
I do think it would be between United and the Alexis Sanchez team and the Harry Kane team.
I think De Bruyne team would be...
And the De Bruyne team.
Right,
yeah. Yeah, the De Bruyne team would be up there as well.
I mean, we had the discussion went on for a while and we were picking various players out of Spurs. I think the Tongan team would be pretty handy. He's a technically good player. Could do a lot. You know, he'd defend well. Don't know about in net, but I think he'd be a good striker as well.
It would be poor on the right. He's not great with his right foot, Tongan. He does like to cut back.
No.
It would struggle a bit on to get crosses in from the right.
Yeah. The Dembele team would be... You'd never lose the ball, but it would finish 0-0. It's just you'd get to the edge of the box.
89% possession.
Yeah.
There's just no shots.
Yeah. Just going round and round the centre circle. It'd be a good team. But it's a stupid question.
I quite like it.
But there's so many layers to it, isn't there? Because you just think... Like Christian Eriksen, he would be brilliant up until you got... into centre back.
Yeah.
So you have to pick the right sort of player. Yeah, so Kane maybe would do it.
Yeah, the Dele Alli team would be good to watch. It'd be shithousery.
Yeah.
Lots of nutmegs.
Eight men left on the pitch every single game. Yeah. Well, let us know who you think.
Yeah, no, you get involved. Yeah.
Like opening up like Blue Peter or something. Well, that's it. We've got all. We've spoken about everything that we have to speak about, Dan, including classic comedy from the 70s.
Yes.
Thanks for bringing that to the table.
You're welcome.
And the press conference quotes as well, which all of that is likely to be out later tonight, I imagine.
Yeah, yeah. There's some interesting stuff already out there on Lucas Moura if you haven't read it.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, Poch will be talking about the away record of the Big Six.
All right.
10:30 tonight.
Great stuff. Final question before you go.
Yeah.
What the hell do you think you're doing?
What?
Being on the Fighting Cock three times in they, 4 days.
They begged me to go on.
I'm sure.
It's promoting the podcast. Can we do
you
this?
Did actually, yeah. That was, yeah. Can we do this off air?
Can we do this later?
No, it was good actually. If you haven't listened, the journalism one was actually really, really interesting. It's like an expanded version of the first 10 minutes of our pod every so
when you. Yeah, I know. I enjoyed doing it, and it's it's something I always try and do on this pod and give a bit of insight. I do, not that I would promote another Spurs podcast, but I do recommend giving The Extra Inch a listen with me and Jack.
Yeah, it was good. All right, good to see you, Dan.
Cheers,
we'll
mate.
See you guys next week after Anfield and
can
Newport.
Can I have a lift to the station?
You can have a lift to the station,
thank
mate. Yeah, no problem at all. All right, cheers for joining us. Bye-bye.